Melnick in the Afternoon going on the road tomorrow to Brossard. Mitch will be back in the hot seat. He's a little under the weather. Connor was scheduled to fill in. He's under the weather. So they asked me to do double duty. They called in Dan Robertson, the voice of the Montreal Canadiens. Mitch Gallo's here. Dave Trenadui for the vacationing Rod Francis. Last night.
Championship and also at Del Barton in New Jersey for Bruce Chappelle. He's a real good hockey player, Kenny Agostino.
Dropped by Barbashev. He scores. Second of the season in 9 games for Ivan Barbashev. The Blues strike first.
Barbashev knows how to score. As last year, a junior, he had 95 points playing for Moncton in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. We just talked about Agostino and we talked about Barbashev. You're going to see the battle. Agostino strong on the puck. Eventually, Barbashev's going to come in and get it. Buy some time, come off the cycle, and just shoot that short side past Mrazek. Great hustle by Agostino on the forecheck. Barber says, are you going to give me time and space? I'll take it. That's an odorous goal for Mrazek to give up, but it's a tremendous job by Agostino and Barbashev communicating and creating that chance off the cycle.
Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Dagwood's Bab Sandwich. Ham and pepperoni dressed like you like it. Now only $7 for a large at Dagwood's.
Hello, Pierre. How are you?
Sean, good to talk to you. Dan, good to talk with you. Mitch Gallo, good to talk with you.
It's always a pleasure when I get a chance to sit in this chair. It doesn't happen that often, and I usually speak with you in different chairs, but nonetheless, I thought this was a perfect opportunity to ask about Ivan Barbashev, someone who is just coming out on the NHL level. He scored a couple goals, and last night you put him in a position like that, he's going to score the goals.
He was outstanding. I think the biggest thing is comfort level with the puck, comfort level without the puck. He's a second-year pro. He was a dominant junior player in Moncton. And you can see the training that he's had down in Chicago with the Wolves in the American Hockey League has been awesome. I looked at Stevie Thomas after he scored, and I said, good player. He's an assistant coach with St. Louis. And he goes, really good, especially without the puck. And then you saw it over the course of the game. Not only good with the puck, good without the puck.
What's his upside, Pierre? What's his ceiling, I should say, do you think? What type of player will he be when he's all rounded out and mature?
Probably a really solid second or third line center. If he's a third line center for you, he could probably be Lars Eller plus, just to put it in a Montreal reference point, because I think he's more of a pure scorer. Lars was never really a pure offense, the point producer. He's just a solid checker and a good, useful player. I think Barbashev could be a little bit more a Nick Bonino type, and maybe faster than Nicky, but that type of a player.
So, obviously, some opportunities presenting themselves because of the injury to Paul Stastny. And do you think they're able to tread water without one of their better offensive players?
I'm blown away by what's gone on in St. Louis. The coaching change has clearly worked there. Pains me to say it because I'm a big fan of Ken Hitchcock and we're really good friends. They needed to lighten the load in the room. They've definitely done that. It's a completely different dressing room. It's a completely different coaching office. Everything's just much more relaxed. Everybody is having fun hanging out. You know, he's been a coach there now for 7 games, the head coach. They've won 6 of 7. I mean, done a really good job. Mike Yeo's done a really good job, and I think the number one thing he realized, I got to make this a fun place for guys to come again, and guys are having fun coming there.
They have an interesting situation because, one, they were around a wild card team. They make the coaching change. They've gone on a bit of a run, but they have a pair of players that they just don't want to lose for nothing, whereas they might be even sellers at the trade deadline. How does the room and the team kind of deal with that Shattenkirk or maybe even a Berglund might be on the move?
Well, I've had long talks with Kevin about it all year long. Kevin Shattenkirk, he lives near me in the summertime and down in Connecticut, and I see him at the rinks a lot in the summer. And, we get along. We have for a long time. I think the biggest thing with Kevin is he's kind of immune to all of it. He's kind of ready for it, Sean, so I don't think it's a big issue. Patrick just loves being part of the group. He had a lot of the Swedish guys over for Christmas this year and at his home in St. Louis. You know, he's really good friends with Steen. He's really good friends with Gunnarsson. So, I mean, he's comfortable with the team. It's the only team he's ever known. I don't think it's as big a deal for either guy. They're both pretty mature. The one thing I'd say about Kevin, Shattenkirk is that it's pretty apparent it's either going to be the Rangers or the Bruins that'll eventually get him. I don't think there's anybody else that really will get him, even though people will try. So it'll be interesting to see. But maybe St. Louis keeps both guys.
Now, watching Detroit up close, obviously I know they didn't do much offensively last night. But, Pierre, if Detroit decides to become a seller, and you're a team like the Montreal Canadiens, is there anybody on that roster that you saw that you might be interested in?
Well, I'd love to get Zetterberg, but he's got, you know, 4 or 5 years left on his deal, so that makes it tough. Love to get Advocator. He'd be exactly the perfect tonic to play. He's just not a centerman. That's the only problem. He'd be there's not much else there right now. I mean, they're not going to trade you Anthony Mantha. They're not going to trade you Dylan Larkin.
What about Vanek?
What's that?
What about Vanek?
They might. I mean, Thomas has played really well there. Thomas played hurt last night, too. I mean, he's really hurt. He's got a real bad left wheel, but he played last night. They might, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the asking price is going to be.
Pierre, heading into tomorrow's practice for the Montreal Canadiens, Claude Julien's first, what kind of practice does he want to put? It's a weird situation because the players haven't been on the ice. It's his first chance to really put things together. How is he going to set this up tomorrow afternoon at 4?
Energy and attention. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, Sean. They have to be full of energy and they have to be paying attention. There's a new sheriff in town, so they got to be excited about that. And they have to pay attention because there's going to be some new messaging. Probably a little bit different wrinkle in terms of their end zone coverage, maybe some different face-off plays, even though they're not a dominant face-off kind of team, and maybe some different things on the power play in terms of entries. So the biggest thing, two things, are energy and attention. He's got to stress those two things going in.
So tomorrow, I haven't taken in a practice this year, Pierre, but I'm going to be on site with Mitch tomorrow in Brossard watching the practice because of the week off, they're practicing later than they normally do. So we'll be on site while they're practicing. What should we be watching for in terms of a Claude Julien practice?
He likes the puck moving real quick. He likes tempo. You'll see a lot between the two blue lines, at least you usually do when you watch a Boston practice. And then potentially at the end, you'll see a lot in terms of defense coverage around the goal. The biggest thing I think to look for, though, if you're going, look for maybe some potential different line matches. Look for some different defense pairings just to see how he gets their attention and gets their energy up. That's, again, I can't stress that enough. That's really important when you make a coaching change during the year because you don't have the luxury of training camp to implement your philosophies. So what you need to do is get energy quick and attention quick.
Pierre, it was interesting yesterday, the Canadiens and Claude Julien said there's no changes to the staff other than, of course, the head coach for at least the rest of the season. Then they're going to make a decision. But, you know, we've been talking about relationships with players, Galchenyuk, Beaulieu, but what about relationship with coaches? How do you see his relationship with J.J. Daigneault or his relationship with the Kirk Muller heading into these practices and for the rest of the season?
It's a dress rehearsal for both guys. I'm sure he's going to give them some abilities to go on the ice and run things, and he's going to be checking to see whether he likes what they do or not. You know, Claude's gone through some assistance in Boston. It's not like he's had the same staff there for 10 years. Dougie Jarvis used to be on the staff. He's in Vancouver right now. Jeff Ward used to be on the staff. He's in New Jersey right now. They've had some different people on that. Dougie Huda was on that staff. He's in Detroit now. They've moved some people around with that staff. So you got to do what he wants you to do. That's the way it works in the league, and the head coach is the boss. And if you're the assistant and he doesn't like what you're doing, maybe you won't be around. But I would say that it's a dress rehearsal for JJ, and it's a huge dress rehearsal for Kirk.
Do you see those personalities mixing? Let's go with Kirk Muller and Claude Julien.
Oh, I could see that mixing for sure. Claude will really respect the way Kirk worked and the way he played and some of his coaching. And remember, Kirk was a head coach in the league, so he coached against Claude. Claude will have a reference point on that when Kirk was in Carolina and Claude was in Boston. So he'll know either he was an easy mark to coach against or a tough mark to coach against. In terms of JJ, it might be a little bit different, but it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
Now, a lot of people have been making a big deal about Galchenyuk as of late and how Julien might approach Galchenyuk. But, Pierre, I want to ask you about Nathan Beaulieu, because I remember at the beginning of the season, you kept saying repeatedly, that they can't break his spirit and they got to just let him play. How do you think Bolia reacts to the coaching change?
It depends how hands-on Clody wants to be with the defense. In Boston, this year in particular, he wasn't as hands-on because he had Bruce Cassidy there, and I think he trusted Bruce. Bruce was a former defenseman, a first-round pick of Chicago. Clody would know him because Bruce played with the Ottawa 67s. Clody's from around that neck of the woods, so he'd know him. He trusted him. He wasn't as hands-on. The previous year when Dougie Huda was there, he was a little bit more hands-on, so a little bit different. It'll be interesting to see again to see how much leeway he gives either guy. But with Nathan Bolia, more than anything else, he should be looking at this saying, I got to, you know, please the new boss, and I got to get out there and get going. But they can't. He's one guy. You can't break player's spirit. And he's one guy that if you break his spirit, he's not. It's going to be hard to get it back.
I think on the penalty kill, you almost got to take your brain out and just, you know, trust your instincts, and that's work hard and try and, like you said, be really, really aggressive. And I think when we give guys on the half wall too much time and space, well, then, you know, the other three penalty killers on the ice have to read and react, and they have to think a little bit too much. So I think it all starts with the first guy being aggressive on the half wall guy, making sure he presses down, and then the other three, you know, penalty killers can read off that and be aggressive as well. So it's something that's been preached, and it's definitely an area that we have to get much better at.
Max Pacioretty yesterday on Off the Cuff with Knuckles and Sergio and myself, breaking down the Montreal Canadiens penalty kill, which has struggled this year, Pierre. He kind of sounds like a coach a little bit, and this is before he's even had a chance to speak with Claude Julien.
You have to establish pressure points, and every team has different ways of establishing those pressure points. I showed it last night during the Detroit-St. Louis game, the way St. Louis establishes pressure points. One of their reference areas is if the puck carrier turns his back to the play and faces the boards, you instantaneously attack. I showed that yesterday. That's one mode of establishing pressure points. Minnesota does it another way. I just heard Max say the guy up high establishes pressure on the half-board guy. Well, Minnesota does it a different way. They come with their down-low guy. They seal the inside with the low forward, and the down-low defenseman's ready to rotate across to the puck going down to the icing line, but they pressure from down low and establish a pressure point that way. Every team's different. Depends on the hockey sense you have. But the number one thing you have to have stick position. If you're going to establish pressure points in in-zone play, you have to have stick position. And if you don't have it, you're not going to have a penalty kill.
We were toying with the idea a little bit earlier today on Habs Lunch when talking about the Canadiens penalty kill and what Claude Julien might do coming in, and one is using different personnel, guys that haven't been on the penalty kill. Your thoughts on maybe Brendan Gallagher giving that a shot, or if Claude Julien would give him a shot on that?
Brendan can play anything and do anything. Brendan's an amazing player. The fact that he's made it to the NHL speaks to his heart and his courage, and he defies all those analytics guys out there, because he never would have made it based on analytics. So he's just an awesome guy. I really have so much respect for him. He might. I think they got to be a little nervous about the hand again and the shot blocking. You don't want another fractured hand. That'd be three in less than 2 years. I don't think you want that. And a lot of times when you're killing penalties, you're blocking shots. But I would say that, see, one of the reasons why Boston's good on the penalty kill, a 6'9" defenseman like Chara, real good goaltending usually from Tuukka Rask, and faceoffs. When, you know, if you look at the top penalty-killing teams in the league, they win the initial draw. And that's such a key component to killing penalties, winning the initial draw and clearing the puck. And when they have Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, those are two guys that are very good in the faceoff circle. Makes a big difference. Dominic Moore, very good in the faceoff circle. So there's a lot that goes into penalty-killing. It's not just the players on the ice. It's how you clear the puck, how you take faceoffs, what's your up-ice pressure. I mean, there's lots of different things that go into it, not just players.
So then, just on that aspect then, Pierre, what about a guy like Andrew Shaw on the penalty kill, because he is one of their best face-off guys?
Yeah, it's a good point, very relative point. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think that gets a priority right now, and I said energy and attention early. Part of what you want to do when you're a new staff coming in or a new coach coming in is make sure everybody understands exactly what their role is. So you create these roles early and often for guys so that everybody knows that they're on the same page with the coach. There's no mixed messaging. That's going to be an important part of it. Very important.
All right, moving around the NHL last night, Pierre.
Huberto, a backhand through center. Stolen back and backing inside the shark zone. Giving the puck away was Vlasic. Now the Panthers working around. A shot, they score from the high slot. It's Barkov on a one-timer after a short pass from Yandle. The Panthers a 3-1 lead.
And Jagr picked up an assist on that one. Dan?
Yeah, Pierre, I followed the Penguins a lot in those early days of Jagr's career. I'm just wondering, I can remember him playing on a line with Brian Trotsche and Troy Loney. Did Trotsche teach him anything? Somebody who had won, four, then six cups eventually, two with the Penguins. But do you think he helped him at all in his early days in the league?
Oh, absolutely. That's really good because Brian, at that time, his family stayed on Long Island. Yarmer's family was in the Czech Republic, and Brian used to look after Yarmer a lot. That's absolutely true. And, I stayed on the ice with him a lot of times, just because he had nowhere else to go. But Brian was an amazing resource for him. And in Yarmer's first year, just before the trade deadline, we got Ronnie Francis, and Yarmer kind of got a little bit of a bump and played up with Ronnie, and that made a big difference. Ronnie was a great school teacher and a mentor for Yarmer, and eventually he moved up and played with Mario a fair bit, especially in four-on-four situations. So, yeah, no, there's a lot to that. Brian was an amazing mentor. Brian Trotsche at that time in his career knew he was getting near the end, but he took it upon himself to make our young players really understand what it meant to be in the NHL and how to compete every single day as a pro. He was invaluable.
When you were looking at Jagr at 18 and 19, did you see the player in the future that he turned out to be? Could you tell this was going to be a dominant National Hockey League?
1,900 points later.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, it was even before that. The World Junior in Alaska, he played on a line with Robert Reichel and Bobby Holik. And he was younger than both of those players, and he just stood out. I mean, both those guys had tremendous NHL careers, but he just stood out. And back then, the Russians had a line that was pretty good, too, with Bure, McGillney, and Fedorov.
Imagine.
So, I mean, it was high-end hockey back then, and especially for the Eastern Bloc countries, because they still were Eastern Bloc. But Yarmer stood out, and I remember watching him once, and I forget who his club team Kladno was playing against, but it was ridiculous. He's playing against men, and he was toying with them. He was huge. He was gigantic for his age, and he was so powerful.
His ability to shield the puck. I don't know if, do you know anybody, does anyone come to mind who was better at that? I mean, he's got the reach, he's got the lower body strength, and I seem to remember that almost from day one, but is he the best ever at that, or at least close to it?
I don't know about, I think Gordie Howe was pretty good at that. I think Jean Beliveau was very good at that. I'll tell you a guy in the more of the modern era that was really good at that was Ulfi Dahlin, if you remember Ulfi.
Yeah.
He was very, very good at that, and he could get his skates going so that his heels were touching as he was coming out of the corner, and he could spin in so many different directions. It was unbelievable. So he was another one, but I just say for sheer power, Keith Tkachuk was very good at that too. Keith was awesome at that, but those would be some of the better guys. I'd still say, based on the points and the years of service, Yarmer has to be considered right up there with Gordie Howe for his ability to protect the puck.
So, Pierre, is tonight the night for Sidney Crosby? He's been trying to get to that 1,000 mark.
Well, he's going to obviously get it at some point, but you would hope. Take some of the pressure off for him. They've got a pretty busy schedule coming up, Pittsburgh, so you would hope that he could get it done and move along and not focus on that.
You think there's going to be anything in the Philadelphia-Edmonton game tonight between Manning and McDavid? You did in the whole classless, last time they played?
These points are really important for both teams, so I can't see anything, tomfoolery or shenanigans happening. The one thing I'd say is if it ever got out of control, the game, in terms of the score, and one team clearly knew they were going to win and the other team clearly knew they were going to lose, potentially there's some retribution from the Edmonton side. But I'd say if it's a close game, I can't see anything happening. It's too too important, especially for Philadelphia after their loss last night. That was substantial for them to lose last night.
Pierre, tomorrow you'll be back with Mitch. Will be back. He's healthy enough to go, and you'll be with Mitch Gallo and Dave Trenadui as you're going to be joining them just as the Montreal Canadiens practice wraps up. They're going to be live on location. So thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks, Pierre.
Sean, Dan, Mitch, really nice visiting with the three of you. Thank you very much. It was a blast. Really enjoyed it. Thanks.